Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
Many eligible voters for the June 23rd primary in New York are receiving applications for absentee ballots in the mail as the state tries to make it easier for people to avoid physically going to the polls during the COVID-19 pandemic. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, voting rights advocates say more needs to be done.
Under an executive order signed by Governor Andrew Cuomo, voters eligible to cast ballots in the Democratic presidential primary, as well as several congressional and state legislative primaries, will be mailed applications for absentee ballots. If they are concerned about voting in person during the pandemic, they can send in the application, postage paid, and receive an absentee ballot and cast their vote that way. Cuomo spoke earlier in the month.
I don't think it's a good idea to have people go standing online to vote. You shouldn't say to a person, if you want to exercise your civic duty, you have to endanger your public health and possibly endanger others.
The state's constitution places strict limits on reasons that voters can cast mail-in ballots. So the applications require voters to checkmark a box. It states that they want the absentee ballot because of temporary illness relating to COVID-19, as allowed under the governor's executive order. A letter explaining the executive order is included in the packet. The legislature is in the process of changing the Constitution to make it easier to vote by mail, but that won't be in place until 2022 at the earliest. In the meantime, advocates, including the League of Women Voters Jennifer Wilson, say lawmakers can enact several measures to make the present system work better. Wilson, whose group is part of the Let New York Vote Coalition, says she's pleased that one of the measures was approved by the Senate and Assembly this week. It would do away with the requirement that applicants for absentee ballots have to physically sign the application and can instead do so electronically.
So that you can request by internet, you can request by email or request by any sort of electronic means without needing a signature.
The measure enables voters to also go to the Board of Elections website and sign up for an absentee ballot. The coalition also wants to see the absentee ballot option in place for the primary extended to the November elections, but that measure was not taken up. New York has a long history of legal challenges to absentee ballots in very close elections, and votes are sometimes invalidated for seemingly trivial reasons. Until now, absentee votes have represented around just 4% of the total vote. Wilson doesn't want to see ballots invalidated on a larger scale when more people take the mail-in option, as expected in the upcoming primary.
That they're not going to get thrown out for any sort of stupid infraction, whether they fill it out in the wrong color ink, or they mark outside of the lines, or they don't seal the envelope correctly, or they tape it shut instead of licking it shut.
Susan Lerner is with Common Cause, which is also part of the coalition. She says the practice of invalidating absentee ballots on technicalities is even more egregious now.
It's particularly obnoxious if we are in the middle of a pandemic and we're expecting many, many more people to vote absentee. So we believe that the legislature should clarify the basis on which you can challenge an absentee ballot and eliminate these really kind of frivolous objections.
Polls will still be open on primary day, so voters who prefer can still go in person. Specific social distancing rules have not yet been set. Voters also have the option to vote early. Polls will be open 9 days prior to primary day. Lerner, with Common Cause, says voters will have more options than ever this time.
We will have 3 ways to vote this June, and that's a very positive development.
Advocates had hoped the legislature would double the time frame for early voting to 18 days, but the measure was not taken up in this week's session. Lawmakers are not expected to return to the Capitol until July. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, this week the governor got fired up after there was quite a bit of looting that occurred simultaneously with the protests that were going on in Manhattan over the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. The governor was very careful to separate out those that are looting as criminals from those who were justified in their protests and doing it peacefully. He was very critical of the New York City Police Department and its leadership, calling it a disgrace that so many were looting. And he went specifically after Mayor Bill de Blasio, going through the scenario that would have to be done in order to, quote, displace him if the governor needed to.
Well, David, you know, we saw Governor Cuomo severely criticizing the mayor of New York and saying he, the mayor, had to keep people safe. And if need be, he could replace the mayor with somebody who could do that. And immediately you saw a change in the way in which personal property, homes, and other things were being protected. And so I think that the message was received from the governor to the mayor, and what we are seeing now is a response so that people will be safe. You know, safety is very, very important.
Does this relationship continue to devolve?
It depends. Let's start with fact number one. As all political scientists have always preached, the city is a creature of the state. So the governor is the important one. The mayors in New York, the mayor of New York, is not equivalent to the governor in their power. The governor made it clear that if the mayor couldn't protect people and couldn't protect property and people's lives, that he could replace the mayor. Do I think he ever intended to replace the mayor? No. But it certainly got some results. Because as soon as this had happened, all of a sudden curfews were being imposed and adhered to, and police were making some arrests. And all of a sudden, what seemed to be a free-for-all in terms of the looting and the other things that had happened originally stopped happening, or stopped happening to a large degree. The governor is gutsy on this. There are many people who think that because of this rage that is running through this country, and properly so, that the few malingerers, the few people who walk into a store and steal stuff and can be seen carrying things out, they are ruining the entire peaceful protest, and the protesters know it and are saying it. And so when a governor comes in, despite the fact that there are a few people out there who are making it clear that it's perfectly justified to break into stores and to show your rage that way, this governor is saying, cut it out and don't do it. And he is imposing his will on the mayor to make sure that his will is being adhered to.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's school board and budget votes are fast approaching by mail because of the pandemic. The Albany City School District has now joined other districts in making accommodations. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
This year, by executive order, schools across the state are doing a mail-in budget. Albany voters will decide on a $261.6 million budget proposal the district says would minimize the local tax impact with no loss of programs or services. The ballots are in the mail right now. Voters are also being asked to consider Proposition Number 2, which would allow the district to purchase what is described as a small piece of property with no additional impact on taxes. One seat on the Board of Education also is up for election. Albany School Board President Ann Savage.
Well, the budget, as always, is all of the things we need to do to support our kids. That's everything from teachers to contracts that we have to do various business work and sometimes work that's directly pertinent to kids, and really every single thing that a kid needs, including transportation. It also includes our commitments to our students who live in Albany but are not directly attending our public schools, including the students who attend charter schools and those that have special education placements that are outside of the district. All of those costs are included in our general fund budget.
If the budget is voted down, Savage says the board can either put up a revised budget and have that voted on or go directly to a contingency budget.
If we were to go to a second budget, it would cost the district around $150,000 to do the vote again. That's a lot more than normal because normally we do not have to mail 47,000 ballots, which is what we are mailing. We mail to every single registered voter. So it's a lot more expensive this year. So the board would have to weigh that cost against the potential for us to be able to have a budget adopted. It's an important distinction because if the budget is not adopted, if we go to what's called a contingency budget, a number of things happen. For example, we definitely would have to integrate $2.3 million of reductions into what the services are that we're able to provide for our students. That's $2.3 million above the reductions we've already made, which were very difficult and painful. Another thing that happens is that we can no longer make our buildings available to community groups at low cost or no cost as we do routinely.
The education dynamic in New York State has been upended by COVID-19. The school year ended much earlier than planned. Summer school is off, and there's a possibility of a cut in state aid of up to 20%. Savage says that hasn't happened yet.
Right now, our budget assumes we will get the state aid that was committed to in the April 1st adopted state budget. That is less than we thought it was going to be because in January, the budget that the governor released, his executive budget, had more state aid for school districts in it. So we've already integrated those reductions that we're aware of, but we have not yet integrated any further reductions that might come.
Savage says there's a chance federal funding could restore some of the losses. Albany School Superintendent Kawita Adams says the fall is going to look very different after significant cuts.
This year, with some of the staffing reductions, we have to look at different models of delivery. And we have tried to keep those reductions in alignment with the enrollment being reduced as well. And so our staffing reductions represent about 8% of the district's total workforce. And while it is a challenge, we are looking at how to structure our programs and schedule our classes and blend and combine some of the services that our students would need to be successful.
Ballots are due back by June 9th. Postmarks do not count in this particular election. You can view the full 2020-2021 adopted budget at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. A vote in New York on whether to adopt recommended maximum contaminant levels in drinking water for three chemicals has been postponed a second time because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Still, clean water advocates say they're disappointed with another delay. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
The State Department of Health on Monday said a June 4th meeting of the Public Health and Health Planning Council is canceled because of the state's focus on the pandemic and reopening. The recommended maximum contaminant levels in drinking water are 10 parts per trillion each for PFOA and PFOS, emerging contaminants found in Hoosick Falls and Newburgh, respectively, and 1 part per billion for 1,4-dioxane. Maureen Cunningham is Environmental Advocates of New York Senior Director for Clean Water.
We know that the Department of Health is working on COVID-19, and that's clearly a public health crisis, but drinking water that's been contaminated is also a public health crisis of a different scale.
Brad Hutton is State Health Department Deputy Commissioner for the Office of Public Health.
We're really right in the throes of reopening, continuing to support really high priority efforts across the state, including our drive-through testing sites, standing up a new contact tracing initiative to make sure that reopening goes as well as it can. And so unfortunately, We're not in a position where we've completed the review of public comments for that MCL reg package.
That comment period was for a proposed deferral provision, which in general environmentalists oppose and water suppliers support. It did not change the recommended MCLs. Dan Shapley, Water Quality Program Director for Riverkeeper, says he's sympathetic to DOH staff being overburdened and focused on the pandemic.
While we don't want to see a delay, we do understand why there has been a delay to this point.
Shapley and other advocates were on a call Tuesday with DOH. Again, Hutton.
And so under the governor's, one of the governor's executive orders here in COVID, some of those rulemaking deadlines did get a 90-day extension, which means that we need to complete our rulemaking by August 7th. Otherwise, it will expire and we'll need to start again. You know, we're very much committed to getting this resolved and making sure that that deadline doesn't become an issue.
Environmental advocates Cunningham.
What we do know is that PFAS chemicals have health effects that include immune dysfunction and an increased risk of asthma. We know that UAlbany is looking into the health effects of PFAS on people, but also they're looking at vaccine effectiveness of people that have been impacted by PFAS chemicals. So all of this has implications for the COVID-19 crisis and really adds a sense of urgency for getting these drinking water standards finished so that people know that they're not drinking contaminated water.
Riverkeeper Shapley.
Setting this standard is also critically important to the cleanup in Newburgh and to other sites around the state, and particularly those sites like Newburgh, where the federal government is responsible for the cleanup. Because what we are seeing is the federal government, the Department of Defense, keeps pointing to the federal guidelines, which are very weak and not as protective as the state standards that we want to, you know, have set as soon as possible.
Shapley refers to Newburgh's PFOS water contamination that stems from Stewart Air National Guard Base. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has an advisory level for PFOA and PFOS of 70 parts per trillion each.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Protests against police brutality erupted around the state, country, and the world after George Floyd, a black man, was killed by police in Minneapolis. In Albany, they continued on Monday this week following a weekend of unrest and looting. The Legislative Gazette's Jackie Orchard reports.
Protesters were back on the streets Monday after the city cleaned up from Saturday's dangerous protests when city police and backup agencies used riot gear, dogs, gas, and officers on horseback to disperse hundreds of protesters who gathered outside the department's South Station. Several storefronts were smashed and there were reports of looting, prompting Mayor Kathy Sheehan to impose a curfew. Protesters shut down the intersection of Livingston Avenue and Henry Johnson Boulevard. A crowd of hundreds, many holding posters reading, "I Can't Breathe," with pictures of George Floyd, chanted, "No justice, no peace." Albany Police Chief Eric Hawkins spoke at the rally and spent time with individual demonstrators. Danielle Howard said Hawkins seemed genuine about opening communication between police officers and African Americans in Albany.
We talked for a while and had very honest conversation. And my question to him was, how does the dialogue stay open? Don't let it be something that's happening right now, because people are upset. People are still going to go back to their lives when all of this kind of simmers down. And people need to know that at the end of the day, they're still going to be heard. And how can their things be heard? And he said that he's going to make sure that he makes himself more accessible and that he's going to make sure that he's seen more often, you know, and that people understand that they have a way to get in touch with him.
Howard says the protesters are angry because they feel government leaders are ignoring their complaints.
The police chief came out here. At what point is the mayor going to come out here? Is the mayor going to let things be heard? She only came out and voiced her opinion on the riots and the looting. So what about this? What about the protests that are happening repeatedly over and over and over again? She remains silent.
Attending the rally, Albany Councilman Owusu Anane says racism is reflected in the number of black elected officials in Albany.
We have 45% African Americans. There should be no reason why we don't have a state representative. There should be no reason why our police force is not as diverse. I think we only have roughly less than 10 police officers with 350 police officers all in total. So again, we have to start occupying some of these spaces.
Anane says there are actions Governor Cuomo can take to help the protesters.
What about repealing 50A in the civil rights so police and firefighters' information can be provided during the discovery? Those type of policies. Before we start looking at other places, we have to also look at what are some of the improvements that we can make as elected officials.
On WAMC Monday afternoon, the Democratic governor said he would sign a bill rolling back 50A. At the intersection of Livingston Avenue and Henry Johnson Boulevard, police officers were not in riot gear. Many moved among the crowd, engaging in conversation with protesters. Reporting from Albany, I'm Jackie Orchard.
While the larger demonstrations have been mostly peaceful, a string of lootings left dozens of city businesses boarding up their windows and picking up the pieces in New York's capital city. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King checked in with store owners on Central Avenue.
Before Saturday, before COVID-19, this street would be a lot louder. Central Avenue, home to WAMC's main studio, is also home to many languages, ethnicities, and different types of small businesses, many of them family and minority-owned markets, bars, restaurants, and hair salons. Now many of those same businesses, if they're open, operate behind plywood barriers. Empire Cash and Carry manager Ali Naji says he and his boss watched Saturday's violence unfold in real time when the store's security system was triggered.
I come in and I see a lot of people outside, a lot of traffic. I tried much I can to get to the back, and it was too late. More than 80 people inside the store already. You can't do nothing. Yeah, you can't defend nothing. You can't do nothing. You just guess you hurt yourself. And then we go in, we start yelling from the back, and then everybody took off. Go to the next. You know, they take turns. First thing they finish with the first store, they go to the second one.
Naji estimates the store's damages at over $15,000. In addition to breaking the main windows, he says the looters busted the store's computer system, shattered glass cabinets, and took off with items like candy and rolling papers. Anthony Capice, a WAMC board member and executive director of the Central Avenue Business Improvement District, says retail stores like Empire Cash and Carry were the hardest hit.
We're still trying to get our handle on how impactful this is. I mean, some of these folks have really struggled with 20% of typical sales, 30% of typical sales. The restaurants, at best, I'm assuming 30 to 40% with no sit-down dining. So having to replace windows and doors on top of that, spending out-of-pocket money of $1,000 or $2,000 is really painful.
Not far from Empire Cash & Carry, Top Quality Beauty Supply opened its doors for the first time in 2 months on Friday and suffered roughly $25,000 in theft and damages a day later. CVS, one of the three in the city, was so battered it's now directing customers to the new Scotland Avenue location for their prescriptions. Kwasi Adubafer is the owner of Breakthrough African Market, which has been selling dry African and Caribbean produce on Central Ave for more than a decade. He says his store got lucky. Aside from some broken glass and a little money stolen from the cash register, the looters passed him by.
Here, you see that nothing is important to them. We just saw on the camera one guy just pick up a Red Bull can and then just went out. He took the money and then he picked up it. We watch it on the camera.
Adubafer says his alarm system alerted police Saturday night, but with officers clashing with protesters, no one showed up. Capice urges shopkeepers to file a police report as soon as possible to help the city assess the damage and to keep their receipts.
The government will sometimes create a program of a tax break if you were in a disaster zone or something like that. And I'm trying to remind people that no matter what happens during COVID or in this particular case, keep your receipts. I know that sounds like really dumb advice, but if you have to recreate this a year from now, and you bought nails and screws and face masks for your employees, or you had to pay for somebody to come do this or do that, you have a record of that.
Capice says the central bid is working on ways to help. Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan announced a series of programs to help those affected by COVID-19 Monday, including a business donation fund to set up grants for those impacted by the weekend's destruction. Sarah Reginelli, president of the Capitalize Albany Corporation, says applications will be available soon through the city's small business facade improvement and retail grant programs.
The program that we are able to mobilize quickly starting this week will allow those business owners who were impacted by this weekend's event to come in and ask for relief and assistance to help mitigate those damages.
As protests continue, many store owners on Central Avenue and in the Capital Region in general are boarding up their windows as a precaution. Adu Baffer says he's frustrated by the situation and hopes things calm down soon.
I'm not against demonstration. You have everybody have the right to do demonstration, but do it peacefully. Saturday afternoon we were here and we saw people marching and I said, this is cool, this is nice. And all of a sudden it turned out to be a violence. I think that's not good.
Albany Police Chief Eric Hawkins and Mayor Sheehan have differentiated between peaceful protesters and people damaging property. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2023. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.